You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Honey, we're officially 100 episodes in.
Wow, that's so incredible.
Yeah, I mean, we've actually done close to 350 episodes, but we actually have 100 full episodes.
On Tuesdays.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so cool. Thank you guys for listening so much.
What a journey it's been. We've been through a lot of stuff in this last couple of years.
Right, which is why we're taking a little bit of a break right now.
Just a little one, because we got to get together for season 11.
Yeah, which premieres at the end of the month.
And it's going to be good.
We wanted to re-release some of our favorite episodes that deal with some of the topical issues we're looking at right now. You know, September is Recovery Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. It's Hispanic Heritage Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, we're talking about race in the classroom right now, and mm-hmm. people are still talking about parental alienation. So we wanted to bring you the episodes that deal with those topics. So that's what you're going to hear from us during the break.
Thank you. And we appreciate you guys so much. Enjoy the break.
Yep. Enjoy.
I am Petra Dieter, and I am the only one talking about parental alienation. Parents don't understand. You have to look at your children with a compassionate eyes. You have to understand the trauma that the children being put through. So you need to pick up a different set of skill set that is very conscious of the children trauma and the situation they are in, so that you can help the children going through this.
I'm probably one of the few people I know who still looks forward to my Sunday newspaper. Not a digital copy that I read on my phone, but the real finger-staining, loud crinkling, section-by-section newspaper. The Sunday paper for me is a treat to be enjoyed while lounging in bed and sipping hot lemon water. So one day when we were going through all of the Only One stories that are being submitted to us, thank you for those, by the way. We love reading them. It was Scott's idea to record and release a few of them occasionally, but always on Sundays, and call them our Sunday edition. And because they're only 30 minutes long, our hope is that you can enjoy them while sipping your morning beverage, going for a walk, or even just enjoying a lazy Sunday at home. Please enjoy today's Sunday edition, and be sure to listen every Tuesday when we drop another brand new episode of The Only One in the Room. Petra Dieter, how are you?
Very good, thank you. Thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah, no, we're very happy to have you. And my first question to you is what did you have for breakfast this morning?
Oh, I didn't have breakfast.
Did you not eat at all today?
I haven't had anything today, no.
Wow. And so what is it like? It's 2 o'clock. So is that normal for you?
Yeah, I'm not a morning person. I tend to work whole night, and then I don't get up until later, so really it's very early for me.
It's early at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. That's great. What is usually your first meal of the day?
It's usually like, yeah, I have dinner with my husband. That's sort of like my breakfast, and mm-hmm. then at night I do eat later as well. Yeah,
like 2-3 in the morning.
Yeah, well, I'm working, you know. It's really bad, but yes, at night I'll be eating stuff. Yeah.
You're just in the upside down world then. You do the
Yeah.
opposite of what most people do,
Yeah.
right? Yeah.
Sort of like living in a different time zone, you know.
Yeah. So what is a typical breakfast slash dinner for you?
We love seafood, so usually like some kind of fish or
Okay.
shrimp.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
really, yeah,
Yummy.
just like, yeah, my husband's very conscious about, you know, healthy food and things like that. Yeah, I rarely have my children, but when I do, then it's less healthy than
Right,
it's
right.
whatever the kids want. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for that. I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is the Only One in the Room special Sunday edition. But I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, honey. So, honey, this is something that I think you and I have just learned about in recent years.
Yeah, I think it's something probably we've experienced but never had words for.
Yeah, well, yeah, kind of. And it's parental alienation, and it occurs usually during a high conflict divorce. And it's in which the child identifies strongly with one parent, usually the custodial parent, and the alienating parent programs the child to despise the other parent by criticizing the alienated parent and interfering with their relationship.
Really complex, huh?
Really complex. And here to dive into this with us today, we have Dr. Petra Dieter. Dr. Petra, or Petra, is an award-winning film director and social impact builder. As a survivor of child abuse and domestic violence, she is passionate about creating social impact to advocate for victims. She is the founder and parental alienation strategist at the Victim to Hero Institute, where she provides resources and support for victims, raises public awareness, and champions system and social changes. So really welcome. Thank you so much for coming on to talk about this.
Thank you so much, Laura and Scott. Really, I'm grateful to be able to be here.
All right, so let's just start with your childhood. You told me that your mother brainwashed you into thinking that your dad was a monster, saying that he left the two of you. Is that right?
Yeah, it's I grew up with this whole childhood with this image that my dad was a monster, and it's really crazy because you would think that being so educated that I would recognize this. And I mean, a lot of alienated parents will question their children, thinking, well, my children are adult now. Why don't they understand? It's strange for me to look at back at my own experience and think, I never stop and question that. You know, it's always, he's a monster. He's horrible. How he left her, he left us, you know. She always sort of frame it as if it's about him abandoning me, but really, he never abandoned me. He left her. That's the adult problem. It's not my problem as a child. And I never sort of question or examine like what he did. I just took her words that, oh, he's horrible. I couldn't tell you what he did. I mean, he didn't do anything, but he
Right.
was a monster. Yeah.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered, and we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
And so how did you, when you thought about your father, or did you see him at all when, after he left the home?
I saw him twice. Once he was, I don't know, at some event, and I saw him briefly, like he did come by and, you know, was able to see me for like maybe a day. And then that when I was, I think, 7. And then another time when I was an adult, I was living in Australia and I went and visited him. I went back to Vietnam and visited him shortly, like briefly for a few days. Yeah.
Okay. So I do want to hear about what he might have said to you then, but I want to go back to you as a kid. Like, what did you tell people about your dad? What did you think about him when you were a kid?
Oh, I always said that he was a monster. I thought that he was a monster. I thought that he abandoned us. I felt very much that it was my role to protect my poor mother, that she was abandoned. And, you know, like, I grew up in Vietnam, so the society is very much against divorce and broken families. So, you know, now I felt even stronger that it's my job to protect my poor mother. And so, you know, and she was very abusive to me, actually. She was extremely abusive every day.
It's okay.
Sorry.
No, don't apologize.
Okay, so she was extremely abusive to me. And every day she would come home and beat me up. Mm-hmm. And I learned very quickly as a child that if I could get to a corner, then I would be safer, because the corner would prevent, you know, chairs and table from hitting me because of the wall. Yeah. So while, even though she was really abusive to me, and she was always saying, you know, your father is an animal and you have the same blood with him, so he's, you are an animal, and all this horrible thing. And even when I did nothing, you know, even if like somebody looked at her wrong on the way home, even if somebody at work was saying something negative to her, I would be the one that who was the receiving end of her anger.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I, when it comes to my father, I then blame everything on him. And I always thought, you know, if he didn't leave us, you know, then we would have a happy family. like, you know, all the time. And so I remember even going to school and writing, you know, homework essay that I would wrote that, you know, my father is horrible and I don't need a father and my mother is as good as both a father and a mother and all this thing. And meanwhile, you know, at home, I was treated horrible. I mean, it's so bad. She didn't, you know, she constantly confused as, you know, what class I'm in, what age I was. She had no idea what's going on in my life. And I don't know. I'm sorry. I know you were asking about her, but anyway.
No, I was. And I mean, I was asking about your father, but that was going to be my next question. And I just want to stop and say, I'm so sorry that that happened to you. You know, both Scott and I, like, the temperature changed in the room here when you started to cry because we felt that. Yeah. What were you going to say, hon?
I was just going to say, I think a lot of people have been in the position that you're in one form.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to be completely reliant on a parent that is abusive is a really, like, some people don't live through that. You know,
yeah.
And you're here telling us this story. So I'm really glad that you're getting to tell it because there are people listening who maybe don't know if they're going to get out of those types of situations.
Or that they can even get out.
Or that they can get out.
Right. And the crazy thing is I never recognized that I was a victim of abuse.
Yeah.
Then that's the problem is that a victim of abuse is very unlikely to recognize that because the abuse get to you from the psychological level. So you are conditioned to feel like you deserve the treatment and that you also learn to accept those behaviors as a norm.
Yeah. Not to get too much into your mother, but do you think there was some mental illness there?
I mean, she was admitted to a mental hospital at one point, I mean, somewhat recently, you know, a few years ago, but then she convinced my grandfather to get her out. So he signed some paperwork to get her out with a condition that she would be continue to take medication. She stopped taking medication. Yeah.
Mm. Oh boy. Okay. So you are this kid who is in a culture that doesn't believe in divorce and your father has left the home. Your mother has not taken it well and takes it out on you, and you grow up like that. How did you discover that your mother had been dishonest with you about your father?
Actually, I didn't discover it until last year.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why this work on Victim to Hero is actually brand new. I just started this a little bit more than a year ago.
Uh-huh.
So there's an incident that happened when I was 7. So in Vietnam, we were very poor, and we were always in this. We only had one room. That's our entire house, you know. That's kitchen, living room, bedroom. It's just one single little room.
Mm-hmm.
And she was always bringing men home. And so one of those men, you know, molested me when I was 7. Mm. And so when I brought it up to her, she shut me down and said I was not allowed to tell anyone about it. She was never like, are you okay? Never took me to a doctor, anything like that. It was just, you have to shut up. So I remember I was only telling, I think, one of the kids in the neighborhood about it, but I really didn't tell anybody. So last year, recently, I actually sponsored her green card to bring her to America to live with me. So she lived with me. And then last year, one day, she brought a homeless man home and said, this is my boyfriend. And he's going to move in and live with us.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was really shocked. Yeah, and I said, okay, give me 3 weeks to figure out either for us to move out and you can live here with him or find a place for you guys to move. And she agreed. I said, give me just 3 weeks. And she agreed. And then the next night I came home and this man is naked in my daughter's bed. My daughter was not home at the time, but regardless, it just brought back all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I was so freaked out. So I asked him to go. I said, could you go? And then he left. And my mother was furious. She then started beating me up and doing all sort of things. And so that brought back this problem. I'm like, okay, you know, I don't want this to happen to my children. So my mother got angry and then she left. But then after she left, I talked to my family, like my grandparents and my relatives. And then someone in the relative reached out and said, I cannot be silent any longer. All these years, we were not allowed to tell you, but I need to tell you. Your mother prevented you from being able to see your father, and you have no idea how horrific the kind of thing that she put your father through. Mm. I never actually end up having that conversation with that person, but then I immediately went and searched on the internet for my father. He had passed, you know, a number of years ago, but I decided to Google things, and then I actually found a website that he left for me. And in there was like photos and writings and letters, and there was even letter that she wrote and letter that he wrote and things like that. And it was shocking to find out the truth.
So wait, he had posted this stuff in a website and left it for you to find?
Yeah. It was actually, I don't know how to describe it. It's not a public website. It's like a Google Doc or Google thing.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, I think 3 months after Google had this policy that if you don't update your site, they shut it down. So it's gone now. Mm. But I'm lucky that I actually found it at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Were you able to save any of the documentation or no?
Yeah, I saved all these.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
Wow. So you have a relative that tells you in 2020.
Yes.
That the life that you had thought you were living was a lie. And that your father had not abandoned you, but had been kept from you by your mother, who you had just had this very disturbing encounter with, that it triggered this childhood memory that's unbearable, right? Like that's an unforgivable thing. And so now you're left with this, and you don't want this to happen to your children. And I want to switch now to your own marriage and your children. So tell me what happened with the father of your children, and did you or are you experiencing parental alienation there?
Yeah, so this is the thing. I think it was interesting what Scott mentioned right at the beginning, was that it's something that a lot of people experience and we had no name for it. And we just thought that we are the only one that experienced this. Really, I mean, like by now I have talked to hundreds of victims, you know, and we all felt like our experience is the isolated experience, and we had no idea how rampant and how widespread it is. So with my situation, I got divorced, you know, I think 10 years ago, and I started to see these things, but I, you know, just like Scott mentioned, I had no idea what it is. And, you know, I start seeing my daughters coming over, and they would say, oh, daddy said that you don't love us, we don't care about us, you know, and this and that. And I would see this, and sometimes it seemed really strange, and I just thought, you know what, I'll just ignore it. If I'm just continue being a good mom, it would be fine, right? You know, I'll just ignore it. So I just continue, and it just went on for years, and I start seeing a lot of different things. I didn't do anything about it. I didn't say anything. And then coincidentally, I don't know the right word, I'm sorry. But anyway, last year, at the same time when this happened with my mother, exactly at the same time, actually, is when suddenly my ex filed for sole custody. We've been having 50-50. Suddenly he filed for sole custody with all these false allegations, saying that I abandoned the kids, I don't care at all about the kids, that I don't feed the kids, all these things. And I read this, I'm going, what is this? Like, I don't even understand. You know, like, I always cook too much. The kids always say, you know, and with my schedule, I'm flexible. So whenever I have the kids, like on the day that I have the kids, I make sure I pick up the kids, you know, and every summer I plan out trip overseas, and we're doing camping, you know, we're doing, you know, outdoor concert, all this stuff. So when I read this, it's shocking. So anyway, the ex then requests that the court have a mediator to interview the kids. So they interview the kid, and the kid said, the older one said, I don't have any relationship with my mother. which is shocking because, you know, the kids are still, I was still seeing them 50-50. And when they over, they like jumping on my bed in the morning and we hugging and we kissing and we playing, you know, pillow fight. We watching show together. The kids will come up with things to do, you know, like we, you know, and we're still doing this camping trip and all. So it's shocking for suddenly to read this. I'm going, what? What does it mean? Like, what do you mean? And I had no idea what this parental alienation thing was. I was shocked. And then so I went on to the mediation. You know, in California, you have to go to mediation before you go to court. I went to the mediation, and I explained to the mediator what's going on, like how the father will say things about me, and then, you know, the father will have not sending me information about school and then trying not to have my contact information in places and, you know, things like that. All these different things. I mean, I don't remember all the stuff, but it's a lot of things that was, and I didn't know the term parental alienation. So I just list these activities that was going on. And then, like, I also noticed, like, for example, the stepmother will constantly, like, every, like, when the children are with me, every 5 minutes, the stepmother would text the kid, oh, what is she up to now? What is she up to? You know, and the kids has to report my every movement, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then I would see things like, you know, the stepmother would say, oh, what is she doing? And then my daughter would say, oh, she's making lasagna. And then the stepmom would say, is it bad? You know, like, it's really loaded questions. And then the kid would answer, like, actually, it's not that bad. You know, the kid can't even say, actually, it's really good. We love it, right? Because if you ask the kid, is it bad? Well, which kid would be comfortable to say, yeah, I actually enjoy it? So the kid said, it's actually not that bad. And I'm impressed that the kid even like dared to say that, you know? So things like that. So I presented this to the mediator, and the mediator said, oh, so you're saying that he's alienating the kids. And I, that's the first time I heard that term, and I had no idea what that, and my lawyer didn't even know what it is either. So anyway, we went through mediation, and then, when we finally went to court, by that time, I just barely starting to read about parental alienation. And I read about, and I mean, in the meanwhile, the kids still coming over 50-50 and we still have beautiful relationship, right? And then we went, before we went to court, my ex was not happy that the younger one didn't follow the older one. So the older one said, you know, I had no relationship with my mother. The younger one said, no, I have good relationship. Everything's fine. I'm good going back and forth between the two families. So he was not happy. So he demanded that they get a new mediator to interview the kids again. And this time he forced that the mediation interview have to be done at his home while he's there. So they did this interview, and you know what, how can the kids be openly talk it while he's there? So anyway, so now both of the kids said, we don't have a relationship with her. And anyway, so by now I started to read about parental alienation. It's still very beginning. I still don't understand it that well, but I read, you know, in the parental alienation model, there's a description of a behavioral manifestation in the children. And for people that experience this, you should look into these models. But anyway, so it's exactly described what my children going through.
Wow.
So then, yeah, so when I went to court, before court, you're supposed to kind of like meet outside. And so I asked my lawyer and his lawyer, can I just talk to him in front of all of them? And I said it would be easier than for you guys, you know, I talk to you guys and go and explain it to him and then go back and forth. It's easier if four of us just stand here and meet. And so I said, hey, I want to let you know that if you don't agree to this proposed arrangement, which so I agree to less time. I'm not agreeing to sole custody going to him. I agree to less time, but, you know, more time in the summer. And if you don't agree with this, I'm going to fight custody for custody based on parental alienation.
Good for you.
Yeah, I didn't understand parental alienation very well at the time. And then so his lawyer said, well, but the kids said they have no relationship with you. And I said, well, that's exactly what alienated children will say. And then he, like the lawyer, literally turned gray. And he turned around and said, I'm going to talk to my client, and then pull my ex aside. They went away for a while. And then they came back and they said, okay, we agree.
Wow.
So we settled that out of court. In some way, I'm grateful that I'm not fighting through the court system because it's always very painful. I am getting less time with the kids, but at least it preserved, because the moment the court was over, I could see it in the kids. The kids could breathe again. I could realize how much pressure the kids were being put through.
Right.
It was horrible. They were so tense. And then afterward, you can see, you know, the kids is like happy again and they can be comfortable and things like that. I mean, I feel bad that I don't get to see them as much, but at least I feel like, you know, we're not fighting through court. I mean, that's not over. That's the thing with alienators is you never know what's going to be, you know, and anytime that he and his wife push on the kids, I can see it in the children.
Right.
You know, you see it immediately. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I have one quick question. So
yeah.
In that process, as you are discovering this idea and this thing that is occurring in your relationship, do you make the kids aware that this is happening? Are they aware of what alienation might look like or feel like?
No, I never bring this up to the children. And this is something that we also don't advise any parents to bring, because, you know, the key is you can't put the children in the middle of this. So I don't do that. I don't bring it up to the children and say, hey, this is called parental alienation. You guys, mm-hmm. you know, I don't do that. But it changed a lot in how I treat the kids. And I'm a lot more aware, because, you know, this is the key thing is parents, they don't realize that the normal parenting behavior cannot right. be used in your situation. Because the children now have gone through what they call trauma. You know, it's a family relation trauma. So mm-hmm. you have to treat the children very differently. And a yeah. lot of parents will react because the children are forced, you know, they pressure into rejecting you. Mm-hmm. So they will turn like cold, defiant, and rude. And parents will react to it. Sometimes parents say, oh, you know, I'm going to punish you. And how dare you say this and that, right?
Right,
parents,
right.
And it makes things a lot worse, because parents don't understand. You have to look at your children with a compassionate eyes. You have to understand the trauma that the children being put through. So you need to pick up a different set of skill set that is very conscious of the children trauma and the situation they are in, so that you can help the children going through this.
Well, and also you were the child of this, so you have compassion for the children that are going through, which is really interesting. I don't know anybody that's dealing with parental alienation as parents that remembers dealing with it as a child.
Actually, it's very common. Now that I've learned it, it's actually very common. So parental alienation is a transgenerational problem. Mm. If you are experienced parental alienation, chances that you were exposed to it, and very high likelihood, and research shows this, very high likelihood that your children are going to either be the abuser or the victim of parental alienation.
Wow. I have two more questions for you. You did a documentary, right?
We're working on it. It's
you're
not
working
done
on,
yet.
You're working yeah. on a documentary. And then yes. you were telling me about how dangerous parental alienation can be. And you talked about a child who was killed. Can you just tell me that story really quickly?
Yeah, so our documentary film is examining this particular case where it's a very serious case of parental alienation, where the father was extremely manipulative and abusive, and he did everything he could to try to prevent the mother from able to access the child. So he brainwashed the child, he did everything, and they went through 5 years of a custody battle that involved every government agency that you could think of, you know, in multiple states. And eventually, at the end of this 5 years, and every agency, by the way, recognizes, they all notice that the father brainwashed the child. They even use the term parental alienation in that. And then nobody intervened at the right time. Mm. So eventually, at the end of the 5 years, they had a court case, a court hearing, where the judge said, okay, this is the worst parental alienation case I ever seen. I'm going to do something to fix this. I don't know what yet. I want to take tonight to think about it. But I think I'm going to give the mother some of the time back that she lost. And then that night, the father killed the child. Mm. He was 10 years old.
Oh,
and
my
I mean,
goodness.
Yeah, to get to this case, we knew that we're working on a documentary film and we're trying to pick a case. We interview over 700 cases of parental alienation. And I want to tell you that this is not an isolated case. Many of the cases that we interview is where the victim parent got killed or the children got killed.
Right.
So
right.
It's horrific. It's very dangerous. It's not, it does kill, it destroys life, and it doesn't have to kill to be traumatic.
Sure.
I mean, when you look at like, any movies out there, right? You see films, and when you see where the bad guy want to hurt the hero in the film, mm-hmm. they don't just beat up the hero. They usually try to find the loved one of the hero, right? Usually the girlfriend or the child or the mm-hmm. parent,
yeah.
right? Because that's when it hurt the most. And this is exactly what parental alienation abusers do. They will hurt you by using your children.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. Tell me, just as we wrap up, about your foundation, Victim to Hero.
Victim to Hero Institute is where we provide the resources. So we have events multiple times a week. It's entirely free for parents to attend. It's online, where we bring in experts in the field like forensic psychiatrists, you know, psychologists, therapists, lawyers, to teach the victims on how to heal and how to fight their cases so that they can get their children back, how to reunite with their children, how to, you know, parenting skill, things like that. And then we also have public awareness campaigns. So, for example, the documentary film, but we also have a program called the Hero Songs Project, where we have artists from around the world that participate and write songs to dedicate to this. So, for example, we have the American Idol alum, Effie Becerro, is one of the participants in the Hero Song Project. They wrote these beautiful songs for us, things like that. We have many other public awareness campaigns. And then we also lobby for laws to change. So, you know, for example, right now we lobby for a law in Texas, HB 2153, to recognize parental alienation as child abuse, things like that. So, yeah, we do a lot of different things.
That's amazing. And thank you for that service. It is much needed. And I think when you and I talked, I told you that I have, Scott and I have a dear friend who is the victim of parental alienation. And we didn't know what that was until a couple years ago. And I heard about it on a podcast. So hopefully more people will be hearing this, maybe for the first time, put a name to what's going on, go to your site and get some tools and resources. And,
yeah, I think that the biggest impact I had was when you had just mentioned the term to your lawyer, your husband, your ex-husband's lawyer.
Yeah.
And they shut it down.
Yeah. They're like, okay, you win. Let's not do this. Tell me, Petra, where can people find you?
We are, so obviously we have the website. It's victim2hero.com. You know, the letter T-O is not number two. And then we also on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on, you know, all places, but really mostly on Facebook. Yeah.
Okay, great. And thank you so much for submitting and being willing to be so vulnerable. And you know, we really appreciate you telling your story the way that you did. It was so tender and vulnerable. And like, I know I use vulnerable twice, but I don't think it can be underscored enough. It was really important for you to tell it that way. I think the message is really clear and that people will really connect with it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Petra.
Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible brand new Only One interview. And every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading something that I love. If you have an Only One story you'd like to share or a piece of writing you'd like to submit, please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.